Welcome to another episode of The Disciplined Investor. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host, hopefully giving you some advice that you can work with to save you some money, to make you some money. For those of you that are joining me for the first time, hey, welcome aboard. For those of you that have been with me for a while, hey, you know what? We're doing a good thing here. I told you last week that things were going to get a little rocky in the markets, and they did, didn't they? Really a little crazy. And some of the things that we were concerned about, like oil prices and some of the interest rate environment and the issue concerning the credit markets, really came home to roost. And I think that if hopefully you were listening, we were able to sidestep some of the problems because we did take some profits off the table last week. As a matter of fact, we're going to get to that in a moment as we begin our show. But today we're going to be talking with Rob Booker. He is a Forex currency market trader, and he's going to be telling us all about the currency markets. I'm going to give a call to him in a little while, and we'll see if he has some words of wisdom to give us. He's also an author and a pretty good guy, so stick around for that. We're also going to talk about some of the things that are pending right now in terms of the markets and what we have been doing and what I'm recommending. And we're also going to talk about a little tidbit about the book. I have a surprise for you because the next printing is coming out, and I wanted to let you know that, you know, I think I told you that we sold out of the last one because we did what's called the soft launch of it, and the big launch is coming up, actually, and you're going to need to hear about this, so stick around for a minute because we're going to begin with some great information, hopefully making some money, on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, coming right up right now.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, welcome to episode number 32 of The Disciplined Investor. And I wanted to talk to you about the markets because the markets, as I told you last week, were kind of scary. They were getting toppy. They were getting concerning. We went too fast in too short of a period of time and too high in that time period. The market's boomeranged significantly since the low in August, and I think that what we need to do is really reflect on some of the things we talked about, because if you're listening to this podcast for pleasure and just kind of learn a little bit, that's great, because that's what I'm here for, and that's what I want to do. But if you're listening to this podcast to make some money, you need to listen carefully, and particularly last week in this podcast in episode number 31, where we had Harry Dent, right before he came on, I said this. The market moved up too quickly between the August low and the time where we're at right now in mid-October. And my feeling is that if you look at the models and you think about this logically, there is an opportunity for us to take a little bit off the table right now and be satisfied. Investing is not only about making money. It's also about saving money and protecting you from the losses incurred if the markets turn against you. So right now what we're doing is we have been pulling some money out of the markets. We have been kind of giving ourselves a little bit of a haircut, a trimming, if you will. Now, if you remember, I talked about it a few times. In fact, let's go back a little farther, and I want to talk about some of the calls here because I went back in July, and I told you in July I was really concerned about the markets right before the market had corrected. And in that podcast, we talked about this.
There was a huge hangover for our disregard for the reality check, the cold water on the face, the slap on the head every once in a while. And here it comes. I'm going to give you that slap in the head. The fact of the matter is that, you know, you hear all these things, that the trees don't grow to the sky, and there's always a stopping point before the next level. Well, here I am to tell you this. Don't get caught up in your own stuff. I'll be kind.
So the point I'm making to you is this, that if you're listening carefully, by no means am I always right or am I going to always be exactly on, but there are really signals by using disciplines such as fundamental and technical analysis. There are signals that you can pick up on and figure out what is going on with these markets, and you need to act on them, because if you don't act on them, nothing's going to happen. The markets were overvalued significantly. The economic indicators pointed directly due to all of the things we talked about, and realized that if you didn't move out of it, you're nowhere. You should have moved out. We're going to leave our money on the side. Not all of it, of course. Take some of the profits, as we mentioned before, and sit on the sidelines for a while. Now, that brings us to the next point here. I told you that what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks is going piece by piece over the chapters and over the specific points about the book, The Disciplined Investor, that I wrote. Let's go to chapter 5 and talk about risk management, which flows right into the discussion of what we're talking about here with limiting your losses And it's going to flow right into the discussion that we're going to have with Rob Booker, who is a currency trader. So, risk management. I've defined it as the analysis of possible loss, the profession or technique of determining, minimizing, and preventing accidental loss. For example, that could be accomplished when a business takes out specific safety measures or maybe even buys liability insurance. And what we're talking about here is protecting your portfolio. Some call it portfolio insurance. I give examples about two of my favorite ways to do this. Number one, it's by using what we call covered calls. Covered calls are a way to utilize options in order to minimize the downside of your portfolio, because by using covered calls, essentially the stocks that you own and you sell call options against it will allow for you to take in some premiums, thus limiting the downside. The second thing that I like to do is utilize puts, either a protective put where we buy a put and move to allow for limited downside exposure, or we could do other things with puts to say that we're going to bring in premium possibly by selling them in different circumstances. Here's the point. You want your portfolio, number one, to be diversified. That's the first issue of risk. On top of that, we want to make sure that we're using good technical analysis. Know when the tops are coming. Did we see a double top, a double bottom? Do we see that there is the MACD is getting over, or the moving average convergence divergence indicator getting overly to a point that it is way above where it should be, and then it's breaking through and doing a crossover on the top end? Whatever it may be, risk management needs to be adhered to. If you're just sitting on your hands, you're not going to make the kind of money that you want to. And you need to ask yourself, what kind of money do you want to make? Why are you doing this? Is it a game? Just for fun? No. You're doing this to protect yourself. Now, I had some great conversations the last week or so, last 2 weeks, and people call me saying, Andrew, what do I do at this point? And clients call me and people call me about this. And I said, you know, I got to tell you something. The reality is we made a tremendous amount of money, but I can list all the names down over the last few weeks. Now we're starting to move into some short positions on the Qs, the Pro Funds, Ultra Short Funds, the Prudent Bear Fund, and that's making a lot of sense because here's what I want. I want my portfolio to look like a flower garden. A flower garden? What do you mean a flower garden? I want you to have different things in bloom at any given time of the year in any different circumstance that the market throws at you. That can only be accomplished by doing something like this. If we have a flower garden and we have, let's say, only roses, well, only going to bloom for a short period of time. Then they're going to look horribly ugly with the spines and the pricks on them, et cetera, right? If, on the other hand, we have only evergreens in the portfolio, you're only going to have this green mess every once in a while. And, you know, they're never going to go away, but it's just not going to be beautiful. And patients only bloom certain times during the year. But if we have an assortment of all these, if we blend all these together, the bottom line is that you'll have something in bloom in any given time of the year, and that's what you want your portfolio to look like. That's what you want to have. That's what we have: diversification. We have downside risk by utilizing things like sell stops, options, covered calls, protective puts, etc. And last but not least, you have to use some thinking when it comes to being in advance of everyone else. Just because the market's moving up does not mean you have to follow along. You can go against the crowd every once in a while, and I'll bet you sometimes it's going to work out very nicely. And the other thing I want to mention to you is that we still have that competition going on, the contest that it says, are you the next Peter Lynch? Are you the next Peter Lynch? What does that mean? I want you to do me a favor. There's a telephone number to call. It's very simple to do this. I want you to take this down right now because there's prizes. There's $50 gift cards. There's, at the end, about a $1,000 package on the end for the winner after the 4 weeks. Take this number down, 877-623-8473. You call in with your best stock idea. You tell me why it is. You tell me how you found it. Not just the technicals, not just the fundamentals, but tell me something fun about it. Tell me something interesting. Why it is that everybody's going to be buying this thing. And then we'll put it on the site. You'll vote on it. Right now, voting is open for week number, I think it's number one, is still open right now. It will close in a couple of days, but I want you to do that. Take the moment to do that. 877-623-8473. Make sure to leave your email on it. We'll cut that out, but we'll use that for the winners of the week. And when we get back, we're going to be talking to Rob Booker. Rob Booker is the author of a great book that we'll tell you about, and he is a currency trader, and I think that's going to be kind of a fun thing because I don't know a lot about currency trading, to be honest with you, but he does, and I want to find out about it. So we'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
If you like what you hear, we want to know. Go to our show's listing on either iTunes or your favorite podcast directory and leave us feedback and a rating. The more feedback we have, the higher our position on the charts. Think of it as the price of admission. It only takes a minute and helps us understand more about what interests you. Keep our blog and podcast popular, and we'll keep providing you with great investment ideas.
This is Eric Savitz from Barron's Tech Trader Daily, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
As promised, we are with a currency trader. We're going to learn a lot today because, you know, I was talking to Rob Booker, who is my guest today, and I was telling him that I don't know that much about currency trading either. So I thought that it would be great for us to not only learn about it from an aspect of my audience, but also I'd like to know about it. So Rob, thanks for joining me today and helping me out with this.
Andrew, it's good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
So let's just dig right into this. You know, when people think about, you know, this whole area of anything other than, I think, cash, real estate, and stocks, it kind of brings up, oh my gosh, what does that mean? Tell me about, really, for me, you know, pretend that I know nothing about it, which I don't really know much about it. What is Forex trading?
Well, imagine for a moment, Andrew, that you're going to take that long, over-deserved vacation to France.
Oh.
And you get over to France, and you're not going to be able to spend dollars when you want to get a crepe or a great French dinner. You're going to need to pay in euros.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to go to the ATM and pull some euros out. And on the back end, your bank is going to do a transaction exchanging euros for dollars. And that's done in billions and billions of dollars worth of those transactions are done actually every minute on an ordinary weekday in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
What I do as a currency trader is rather than trading for pleasure or for vacation just because I need to do a transaction,
right,
or as a corporation because I need to acquire a Canadian company or a German company or something like that,
mm-hmm,
I purely speculate in the currency markets, meaning I buy and sell currency just like somebody else would, for example, buy and sell a mutual fund,
right,
or a stock, mm-hmm, or, for example, an S&P e-mini futures contract. In the currency markets, it's not only something that banks do anymore. Individuals also are now trading currency for themselves. And so if they feel that the British economy or the European economy or the Japanese economy is essentially strong versus another one of those economies, they'll go right ahead. They'll trade the currency, mm-hmm, in exchange for one another and actually try to profit from the differences in those movements that happen every day in huge amounts all across the world.
Would I be safe to say that right now, when I say right now, in the last, let's say the last 12 months, that this market has really ignited in a way because the volatility, particularly with the low dollar, has been an excellent play for you? Is that a good statement?
Well, it's a multi-part question, and if you don't mind, there's, I guess, two parts of that question in my mind. One part is currency trading has exploded, meaning with the advent of the technology available to trade currency from home and speculate in currency, currency trading is growing at about 20 to 30% a month, meaning
wow,
that's how many new accounts are being added every month to currency dealers and currency brokers. But the second part of that question is really the why, Andrew. It's one thing to say that a particular market is really growing and that people are really joining in droves to trade that market. But the reason for it is exactly what you said. It's a really insightful comment. It's the volatility. It's the movement in the U.S. dollar and the Japanese yen in particular. Over the last 12 to 24 months, there has just been an explosion in volatility. And with that explosion in volatility, you have people who are attracted to the market because it can move a long way in a very short period of time.
So you said, you know, that people could do this from home. It's a lot easier, obviously, with the advent of the internet. I'll compare this, I guess, to stock trading when you had to use a stockbroker back when. Now you want to do it at home. Just, you know, sit down in your PJs and trade all day. You can do that because we have the internet and the access online. But I'm assuming now that maybe it was a little bit slower to get there, but the Forex markets, the currency markets are the same now, and it makes it a lot easier and more people are involved now.
Yeah, I think there's two main reasons that the currency markets two things that I'd want to point out with respect to what you've just said. First is that trading currency online has come later to the game. Really, it started to grow in 2000, 2001. It really started to grow. And it came later to the game than stock trading online did. So just like you said, we went from calling your dealer to trade stocks and, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, that all got deregulated and then huge amounts of competition came in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then at the turn of the century, currency dealers jumped in the game and they took advantage of all the technology that had been available to trade stocks online. They learned from the mistakes and the lessons learned from people allowing regular traders to trade from home stocks and bonds mm-hmm. and futures and whatnot. So the technology caught up really quickly. And second of all, it became less expensive to trade currency, meaning there's a commission associated with stock trades. And as you saw, stock trades decrease in price per trade,
There's one company that's at zero these days. I mean, it's really
it's
unbelievable.
Exactly. Well, that currency dealers learned from that lesson as well. So they learned the technology lesson early and they learned the transaction cost lesson early. And so now you can trade currency online quickly and reliably and also very inexpensively. So there's minimal, if no transaction costs at all associated with it.
So the barrier to entry is, knocked down. So, all right. So take me through. Here we go. Again, take me through the day. When do these currency markets open? And I'm pretend I'm your star student that knows nothing. You sit me down, and you tell me, okay, this is what I'm doing today. How's it work?
Well, first of all, what I'd first let you know is that the currency markets are going to be open for 24 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, exactly. That's a blessing and a curse.
Exactly.
The majority of the movement in the currency markets, meaning the big moves of the day that you can imagine happening. Mm-hmm. So the breakouts and the moves based on news or based on enthusiasm for a particular news item or economic report or whatever, that's going to happen between the hours of 2 a.m. Eastern time and about noon Eastern time. That's when the majority of currency market movement is going to happen. So, Andrew, I would tell you, as my new star student, I would say, are you able to dedicate a few hours of your time during any of those hours from the middle of the night, essentially, all the way up until around noon?
So I have to shift my hours backwards a bit. So, all right. So I'm saying, I'm game. I can start at 7 a.m. I'm good for that.
Okay. That's absolutely fantastic. Now, let's say that conversely, you say, well, actually, that's not going to be convenient for me because I work a shift where I go in at 5 a.m. and I don't get home until 3 p.m. Well, in that case, because the currency markets are still open when you get home, we might work on a strategy that allows you to trade a longer-term setup, so a buy-and-hold type strategy as opposed to a day-trading type strategy.
Right.
So that's the nice thing about the currency markets, where if you're working full-time, you're not completely excluded from a majority of the movement as you would be in the futures market or in the stock market.
Right, right. Okay, so tell me this. So now I bring to the table a amount of money. Stocks, the barrier to entry for that has been much lower. Options and all that's much lower. I mean, how much do I need to start with? I mean, can I start with $10,000, $20,000?
You could easily start with $10,000 or $20,000. What would seem a minimal or very small amount to start in equities trading or in futures trading, because of the margin requirements and because of the cost per share or per unit that you're trading, that level is far lower. It's probably decreased by a factor of 10, Andrew, in the currency markets. Meaning, I've worked with traders who have started with $1,000, started with $2,000, started with, in some cases, even $500 to get their feet wet.
Wow.
And you can actually trade in such tiny increments in the currency markets, meaning you can literally trade for 1 cent to 2 cents to 10 cents per point of movement in the currency markets. There's an infinitely adjustable trade size so that somebody just starting out in trading can actually risk a very small amount of money over the first 3 to 6 months to become very comfortable. And they're not sort of betting their life's savings to just learn how to trade the market.
All right, I'm going to step back a minute. Maybe we could have asked this question a second ago, but I think it's better that we have a foundation now. How did you get started in all this? I mean, how does somebody decide, okay, I'm going to start trading currencies and with these wacky hours and potentially a lot of, we'll get into a minute, maybe some differences than most people know about in terms of investments?
I originally met a currency trader through a friend of mine who had invested money to be managed by this currency trader in Southern California. And I had always had an interest in the markets from the time that I was in law school. My wife worked for a hedge fund, And so I had an interest in the markets already. So I think that people, the first answer is that people who are naturally inclined to think about the markets and think about trading, it's hard to avoid the subject now that people are talking about it. It's much more prominent than it was even 2 or 3 years ago. But I found out about it through a mutual friend who had invested about $700,000 with a currency trader in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And this currency trader in Southern California was, and I know this is hard to believe, was paying my friend a 6% interest payment per month on the money that had been invested. And I thought, holy moly, if he's paying out 6% a month, he must be making an extraordinary amount of money. And I thought, now what other market in the world do you hear people talking about that type of return? And, you know, I'm not going to say that it was a reasonable expectation that I had when I started out. But I'll admit that that was definitely the case. And so that started me on the road of being interested in currency trading. And from there, I went to the bookstore. I picked up a book by Alexander Elder, Trading for a Living. I picked up a copy of a book on point and figure charting. And I just started diving into everything that I could learn about the markets in general, not just specifically currency trading, because 6.5, 7 years ago, there really wasn't that much information written about currency trading. So I just dove in, read everything I could about the charts, everything I could about economic fundamentals, and I just put myself on a course of constant learning about the markets.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I mean, the reality is that, you know, unfortunately, and I'm going to speak for you, and then you can tell me if you feel that this is true. So many people are always trying to take the fast track. They're trying to figure out how to make riches, you know, out of nothing with no effort. And the problem is that in the end, most of them get burnt really badly. And the track that you really want to take is much different. The track is you want to learn as much as you can. You want to find out every little bit, because my theory in life has always been this: the more I know about something, the better I'm going to be at it. So, you know, your process of gathering all this information and learning from everything. I mean, I read, you know, remember the book, The Ted Spread? Remember that way back when? That was the first currency book I ever read. I mean, I don't even know what year that was, but it must have been over 20 years ago. And I was fascinated with it, you know, and that was my introduction to the currency markets. You know, of course, I do more traditional money management for my clients. But, you know, I think that people cannot expect to get just rich overnight with this. Would you tend to agree with that?
I definitely tend to agree. And it's not that people, I guess you could compare it to investing in the S&P 500 with an index fund, for example, or a well-balanced portfolio of mutual funds. You know, it's definitely, it's completely reasonable to expect that someone can make a significant amount of money over the long term. But it's really not accurate or truthful to say that people are going to make an exceptionally large amount of money in the short term. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I liked about your book in particular was there's just not a lot of focus on risk management in much of what is talked about today with respect to the financial markets. And I'm not knocking financial television or the Wall Street Journal or late night television commercials, but there's just not enough said about the fact that risk management or controlling risk or reducing risk is an essential step in actually becoming wealthy. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, that I have a greater chance of becoming wealthy if I pay more attention to risk management.
Right. Now, I think it's important because, you know, a lot of people, they don't, you know, what happens is they let things ride and things are great and they do opposite of what they should be doing. You know, they oftentimes will get in at the wrong time and out at the wrong time. In fact, they don't do any risk management, none at all. No hedging, no asset allocation, no diversification. I mean, there's nothing that goes on there. And that's why I wrote that. As a matter of fact, and I'm glad you picked up on that, but that's exactly what I wrote about in the book is, you know, how do you make sure that your portfolio is protected from the downtimes and at the same time profiting when the things, you know, when times are good? Because frankly, most people think that you only make money when times are good. And it's not the American way to make money when times are bad, but I like to make money when times are bad too. Right.
Yeah. And it's not just about making money when times are good, which is exactly like you said, that's the focus. That's what so many people concentrate on is how do I capitalize on things when times are good? It's also about minimizing the losses when times are bad, right, or even capitalizing on the mortgage crisis or the Russian debt crisis or whatever you call it.
Right.
There are ways to use options and financial instruments to even not only minimize the risk associated with lasting out or being in a market that's been difficult, but profiting from a difficult market. And I think somebody who dedicates themselves to a lifetime of learning about the markets and dives in like we were just talking about and is willing to soak in the information and spend the time and think about it in the afternoons and think about it in the evenings, and instead of watching television at night, pick up a book and learn a little bit more about hedging with options and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the types of people who are prepared not only to take advantage of the opportunities when times are good, but they're ready to manage the risk and withstand the difficulties when things go wrong. And I've got friends, Andrew, and you probably have clients that were not as negatively affected by the subprime mortgage crisis.
We had none. I had zero. I mean, well, we were all affected, but I had no exposure to it from an investment standpoint.
And I guess, and that's kind of the point here is I tell this to as many people as I possibly can, and I say it as often as I possibly can. Everyone is going to make investment mistakes, or everyone is going to be in the market at times that are not necessarily ideal. The question isn't how much money can I make. Sometimes the question simply is, when I make a mistake, how much is it going to cost me?
Exactly. You're totally right about that. I'm going to cut you off right there because I want to hear more about this. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion with Rob Booker, who is the author of Adventures of a Currency Trader, a fable about trading, courage, and doing the right thing. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Hit it!
It's about you. It's about money. It's the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stay tuned for more.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
All right, we're back with Rob Booker. Again, he's the author of Adventures of a Currency Trader, a fable about trading, courage, and doing the right thing. Grab that at Amazon, local bookstore, and anywhere else. If they don't have it, make sure to ask the bookstore why they don't have it and get a copy. So tell me about the book. I mean, tell me about, I just finished that first run of my book, and we have another one I sold. As a matter of fact, we sold out, which was interesting because we had a short run, and the next one is, there was like a few left at Amazon a few days ago, but I don't think there's any left anymore. The next one will be out in about a week. When I wrote this book, I didn't realize how intense it was going to be. I'll be honest with you, it was just an amazing process and a great process, but an amazing process. Tell me about your book and where you got the ideas from and what it's all about and who it's for.
The book is specifically written for anyone who has ever thought about making a million bajillion dollars from trading any market, meaning anyone who's ever realized they had initially unrealistic expectations for what trading could give them. That's who the book is really and truly written for, which is 99%
everybody,
of the people,
sure. Who, right.
including myself.
Yeah.
That's the second part of the answer is that Harry Baines, the character in the book, which is written as a fable, is largely based upon many of the experiences that I had as an emerging trader, as I made my mistakes and as I had to come in the evenings and tell my wife exactly what I did with the trading account and where the money had gone and admit my mistakes. And it's a story about a trader who starts with a very small amount of money, quits his job far too early, makes some of the traditional mistakes that traders make, and finds his way through the path of becoming a successful trader in the end.
Oh, that's great. Let me ask you two other questions, and I'm not sure. I'm going to throw these right at you, okay? I want to know about hamburgers and James Brown. What is that? Do they have any connection, or where am I talking about here? Because I was on your site, which was, you have, for those of us that don't know, I'll put in the show links, I'll put the site, and there is videos that Rob has on currency trading and on his various sites. He talks about it. And all of a sudden I turn on, he starts talking about hamburgers. And then the next thing I know, he starts talking about James Brown. So I'm not sure what you need to explain. I'm asking you to explain it to me.
Everything that I do as an educator, the 50% of my life and my business that is spent educating other people is meant to entertain people long enough to help them realize they need to control their risk. Mm-hmm. Everything is about risk control. So the sometimes Dave and I, Dave's my trading partner and associate and best friend from high school. Sometimes we'll do a video and we'll plop up a picture of James Brown and then we'll put the video on the blog. So we do a lot of that. We also, I think at one time, I guess we did put a picture of a hamburger up on the website.
Right, exactly.
I just remembered that. I think that had something to do with Google and the carry trade and the hamburger. But yeah, there's on the blog at piptopia.com, there is an awful lot of analogies in between ordinary things in your daily life and trading the markets.
Well, let me just get back to James Brown for a second here, because I thought that when I tracked it around, there was like a letter from him. Is that, am I wrong here, or is this just a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing?
Yeah, there's two students that I have. Actually, there's two individuals that are students of mine who trade the currency markets, and both are named James Brown. One of those traders, and I think it's actually a really good an interesting thing to bring up here. I'm glad you brought that up. James Brown was a new student and just dove in to testing and experimentation and learning, and right off the bat started going back in time on the currency charts, dedicated himself to the art of technical analysis, and started drawing conclusions from the testing that he did. And he started sending me just tons of these results and information and what he was learning. And it wasn't always successful, Andrew. It wasn't like he came out and said, hey, listen, I learned the secret of making $1 zillion. Mm-hmm. He started to learn from his experience and his testing. And so I made an example of him, that those are the people that do the hard work. I've never met a successful trader who wasn't willing to dive in and sacrifice some of his other discretionary time.
Right.
In learning how to trade the currency markets.
Right. Let me get back to the markets for a minute and talk to you about the dollar, because the dollar has been a big concern. As a matter of fact, just this week, as we're recording this, it is hitting, I think, an all-time low against many of the European currencies. And I have, as an investor, been very concerned over the fact that we have investments in the foreign markets, you know, in mutual funds, et cetera. And one of the concerns I have is that it may be starting to be very ripe time to get out, because as the eventual dollar does come back up, that will mean obviously the opposite will happen to many of the currencies, the euro, the pound, whatever it is, and therefore we're going to probably lose some of the valuation of our exposure overseas. What do you think? This is healthy? Is this a problem? I mean, what is your take on the whole dollar issue?
For a long time, the dollar really, I always say, got waxed. I mean, it just got killed from, you know, as compared to other currencies, because the U.S. trade imbalance was just so severely skewed in favor of other countries that for a long time it just seemed like there was no end in sight to that. And that's the Warren Buffett perspective that I would call it, is that the dollar just continues to lose value against other currencies simply because we cannot continue to run an economy on borrowed funds, so to speak. And so for a long time, that was the general theme. Another theme was that other currencies around the world or other investments paid a larger amount of money in interest. So you could, you know, literally take dollars and buy other investments like bonds in other markets and take advantage of the discrepancy between the interest rates, the interest rate differential, so to speak. And those two things, the trade imbalance and the interest rate differential, just killed the dollar. It was a double whammy for a long time. The problem is now, Andrew, in my perspective, is that the interest rates in the U.S. never really climbed that high. We saw for a long time that borrowing mortgage rates and even capital borrowing in major companies, the interest rates, the longer-term interest rates, never really rose very far. Mm-hmm. And we never really had a proper recession, so to speak. And we never had the Fed raise interest rates to the point where the longer bonds caught up to a great degree. And in my perspective here is that we could actually be ready for another round in the next 12 to 24 months of dollar weakness. If the interest rate that U.S.-backed assets are paying, meaning treasury bills, if they're going to pay us a lower interest rate, and other countries like the Eurozone and the British, maybe their economies slow down, but if they don't slow down at the same pace and their interest rates remain high, those are going to be more attractive investments.
Yeah, but this is a big problem. I mean, we're at a point, I understand that it's actually good for our domestic exports, et cetera, but it is not a good policy for us to have such a weak dollar. I mean, it's really getting to a point of being almost ridiculous.
Well, it is getting to the point where it's ridiculous, and there's always going to be winners and losers. There's always going to be a winner if the dollar falls and a loser if the dollar falls. And I think that's the quandary that we're in right now, in my opinion anyway, if you want to talk economics. The quandary we're in is that we never really had a proper recession. I don't think we've really had a proper recession for upwards of, 20 years or whatever you want to call it,
right,
since the early 90s.
Right.
I mean, it's been a long time since we really flushed out some of that excessive risk-taking in the economy, and we've still got trillions of dollars in derivatives trades wrapped up. We've still got the Fed that steps in, and I don't necessarily disagree with the Fed on every point, but we've really got the Fed that's concerned with keeping the economy humming along at the risk of possibly continuing to prop up or foster an environment in which excessive risk-taking can still be the name of the game. And if that's the case, we could be in for a round of interest rate cuts that even like I just said before, another round of interest rate cuts to spur investing and spur borrowing and keep the economy humming along. That's going to decrease the interest rate paid on U.S.-backed securities, but in particular treasury bills. And
right.
So the money's going to come out of those and it's going to go into bonds and government securities in other nations that pay a higher rate of interest. And that could continue to depress the value of the dollar.
You know, I think if I go back to my history and think about British history and look at British economics, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there was a phrase that they used to call mercantilism. And that was the theory that a country's worth and its power, frankly, its power was based on its worth, its valuation. And we have always been a superpower. And one of the big reasons, aside from the fact that we have the biggest bombs and my dad's bigger than your dad and all that good stuff, the fact is that, we've always had a strong dollar, or at least a dollar that was reasonably valued compared to others. We had a reasonable, offsetting deficit in imports, exports, and we always kept it at very, very level, and at least reasonably level, even though it was potentially, better on one side versus the other. It was weighted well. Now, though, it seems that the Fed has their – I've been talking about this for a while. The Fed has their back against the wall. They're handcuffed. They can't make certain moves that they want to. This last round of cuts that they did was because they got the subprime shoved down their throats. And the other thing that's really bothering me right now, I talked about a week and a half ago about taking some things right off the table. Right before the market started correcting, I told everybody on this podcast, I said, you know what? You need to start taking things off the table because things have run up. Things have gotten out of hand again since the low in August. But my concern now is that what we're looking at is this exuberant attitude where good news is good news and bad news doesn't matter. And it's a real concern of mine on every level.
Yeah, that concerns me too. And I've noticed that as well. And it's a pattern in the charts that I like to look at as well, that often there's that excessive run-up that takes a long, 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 long period of time to take place. And that's the run-up to the Dow at 14,000 or whatever you want to call it, all the way up until the beginning of August.
Mm-hmm.
And we see how quickly and how violently wealth is destroyed, that it takes years to build up to those levels. And then it can be so just massively and violently destroyed within just a week. I mean, it doesn't take long at all for that wealth to be destroyed. And I think when you tell people it's time to take some off the table or it's time to reduce the exposure, what we're really talking about is that we can't assume that the way that it's been for the last 3 or 4 or 5 or 17 years is the way that it's always going to be. There cannot be an eternal bull market, that things don't change. It's not different this time around.
Right.
And I saw that what I saw was when the Fed stepped in and they lowered the discount rate and they lowered the Fed funds rate, that overnight rate that banks use to lend against each other.
The discount window.
And Right. And well, it's the discount window where the banks can go and Countrywide can go when they're really in trouble and they can't get it from anywhere else. And then there's the rate at which they lend to each other overnight. And that's the that sets all of our credit card rates and everything else. When the Fed stepped in to sort of lower that rate to encourage more borrowing, what I saw in my opinion was a lack of attention to how far up we'd gotten and how far crazy we'd gone, and an emphasis on let's just keep the good times rolling. And when they kept rolling and they rolled back up to 14,000 so quick, so just almost immediately.
Powerfully, yeah.
Yeah, I just had to say to myself, something truly is amiss. And what I found interesting, Andrew, and this is just sort of an insight that I take from the currency markets, whereas the equities markets ran right back up close to where they were before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we it's almost like all was forgotten. Like, oh, yeah, the mortgage crisis, that's all washed out.
Right.
Exactly. And then but the currency markets didn't return to previous highs.
Yeah.
Meaning the currency that's used as a proxy for risk that you could compare to the Dow, the currency pair you could use as a proxy would be the British pound against the Japanese yen or the euro against the Japanese yen. When you look at the Dow and you see fluctuations in the Dow on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis, you could see comparable fluctuations in the euro yen and the pound yen. And what I noticed was there was an enormous amount of exuberance for taking the Dow back up to where it was before. But a lot of the money in the currency markets that's used to finance transactions and that has a wider and much larger volume and a wider purpose, that couldn't reach those highs again. And I saw a reluctance to really break out those highs like the equity markets did. And well, that's concerning to me.
Yeah, let me tell you this, that I'm gonna go out on a limb here and I'm gonna wrap this up. I would venture to say that, and forgive me anybody who takes offense to this, but the currency markets are going to have a much more sophisticated trader in it than the equity markets will, generally speaking. And the fact of the matter is that there'll be some more trepidation about putting money in and throwing good money after bad compared to the thought that, oh my gosh, let's just buy on the dip here. And I think that's what went on, and that's what the mentality was. And when I look at the, you know, I do monitor a lot of blogs and a lot of posts and a lot of commentary by individuals out there, and I'll tell you something, it really does make me very, very concerned. And the moral to this story is, coming full circle, is that diversification is key here, and whether it's going to be you know, doing some kind of movement from stocks into bonds or bonds into stocks for that matter, or maybe even think about picking up a currency hedge and doing some currency trading either on a short term or long term. I think that's what the smart money is doing and will do. And if anybody thinks that they can just make money in one investment continually over time, I think they're sorely mistaken. So with that, I'll encourage everyone and my listeners to pick up a copy of Rob's book, go over to his site. Tell me how they can get in touch with you and your site so they can see what you're doing.
Yeah, no problem. What I would encourage people to do if they're interested in contacting me or getting more information, there's a ton of free information at my website. You could either go to robbooker.com or just type in Rob Booker into Google, or you could go to Piptopia, Piptopia.com, Piptopia.com. And that's my blog where there's a ton of free information and whatever else.
What I'll do is I'll put some links on the on my post that relates to this conversation. And maybe I encourage my listeners to go out and, you know, just find out what's going on and maybe learn something about the currency markets. And hopefully we'll have you on again to maybe give us some information and insight and give us some maybe further explanation more in depth about, you know, maybe a couple of trading secrets that you have. How's that?
That sounds great. I'd love to interview you as well for my website, too. So I hope we get the chance to stay in touch.
Oh, that's great. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.